We're here with Dr. Ren now on my podcast after we've been on the Diverse Research Now podcast, which did pretty good.
Yeah.
I saw the LinkedIn stuff or the Instagram stuff. I think I saw some things on LinkedIn.
Yeah. So our podcast is called Voices of Inclusive Research.
There you go.
And yeah, I think you did pretty good.
You had me on there. I was talking about my early days. Yes. And the struggles. I think I got into blood pressure, hypertension, but
and really shared with us kind of what you did to make things work in your early days.
Vulnerabilities.
Yep.
Well, thank you for coming here and supporting us at our first ever local chapter meetup, which is in your hometown.
I love it.
Cheers. Salute.
Cheers.
And
the first of many.
Now we got to talk about your career, how you got started.
Mm-hmm.
And how does somebody go from like starting an initiative like you did?
Mm-hmm.
You don't just wake up one day and say, that's what I want to do. This or you true. Did.
No, this is true. So my work started about 20 years ago in Chicago, Illinois.
Okay.
Coming,
I just came back from there.
Did you love
it? I was
there
like two weeks ago. No, a little longer, right? Like 4 weeks ago.
Okay, so it was still warm.
It was like the last week. They were already saying on the news, watch out. Like, be grateful you have sun. And I was like, what are they talking about? It's freezing over here.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm here now.
Yeah, makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it's pretty cold there. But I love Chicago. Don't get me wrong. It's my hometown. Always will be. But I started there as a research assistant working at Rush University Medical Center. And I started in research. It was like my first job out of undergrad.
Okay.
And wasn't really looking for that type of job. It just kind of happened upon that job. And really loved it. I worked, one of my mentors there, I'm like name dropping, but one of my mentors there is Dr. Neelam Agarwal. She works at the Rush Alzheimer's Disease Center.
And, okay, so Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's. Most of my work has been in Alzheimer's.
Okay.
And it just happened to be like that.
And the sponsor that was here, that's what they were kind of talking about too.
Yep. So a huge field right now, right?
Yeah.
Huge work to be done. But that's where I started. I would actually go out into the community, the Black community there in Chicago, and do memory assessments. In the community.
Like South Side or West Side?
Mm-hmm. Everywhere. It didn't matter. Yeah, anywhere. The doctor that I just mentioned, she was widely known to, you know, recruit a lot of minorities.
Yeah.
Especially in the Black community. So they figured things out there. They had a huge community engagement team that really knew what to do in the community. And so I would help them with going out in the community. We actually went to their homes to do the assessments.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So like the memory assessment in the homes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that is where really my passion started for all of this.
And that's where like a lot of the undiagnosed maybe, or like you can catch. The reason that's so important is you can catch maybe early onset or like before it gets too bad to where like there's nothing for moderate to severe. Mm-hmm. Right now, so you want to catch it mild.
Yeah, yes.
So that's like a true service to the community, and it's a good pre-screening tool.
Exactly. So what we found then was that a lot of the community members, they had no problem with us coming to their home. They actually enjoyed the memory assessments every year. We would do these every year. But the hesitation was when we wanted to offer a clinical trial where they had to take medication.
Why would they hesitate?
Because they didn't want to take medication. And even if they knew it was a problem, it was just always, that's when the hesitation came in. So that's when I really learned about, you know, this hesitation in my community.
But even the same hesitation, even if the provider and the coordinator are also Black, like it didn't matter.
It didn't matter. It was just that, oh, no, I don't want to take anything.
Okay.
I don't want to, you know, I don't, again, that famous, the famous phrase, I don't want to be a guinea pig.
Nothing
experimental, you know.
And so, Tuskegee's still like fresh and people's minds?
And this was, and yeah, because this was like 20 years ago. So, yeah, that was definitely something that
was that generation. Because like, if they're getting screened for a memory,
it was their generation. Yep, it definitely happened in their generation. So they knew about it well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was some of the hesitation. And so
that did such a step backwards for the industry, and to think that it was the government funding it, like, it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the yes. And then the important part was for me, even as I started my work now, early on, one of the things that we did with Tuskegee, mission in Tuskegee, was to really communicate with the community what really happened, because there was a lot of misconceptions on what really happened there. So we actually wanted to educate the community on, like, actually what actually happened, and what, you know, even though it was still a injustice that happened, it was a lot of misconceptions. So that's what we do now is, well, again, what started my passion in this area was knowing that my community was lacking this knowledge, very hesitant. I was getting all this knowledge because I worked in the field. I really wanted to share this knowledge with my community. So that's what really helped me to, you know, figure out later, years later, that, you know what, I really want to serve my community in this space. And so that's why I decided to start Diverse Research Now as a nonprofit. To where,
and when did you start that?
We started January of 2023, so we're coming up on 2 years in operation. Yeah, so we're very young, but we are young and mighty. We've done a lot. We are really, you know, sharing with pharma and sharing with sites, building relationships every day. Sharing what we're doing
here in San Diego too.
Here in San Diego, not just in San Diego, but everywhere. So our goal is to really be a national organization. So we've done events in Chicago. We've done events in Atlanta. We are not just here in San Diego. We have a monthly event that we do in Long Beach. So we're making our way around.
Yeah. And what do sites say when you approach them about this? Like, I guess, how would you work with a site in the first place?
Yeah. Community engagement. So really bring awareness to the the studies.
So it's very practical.
And not just the studies, but educating on the health condition that's being studied.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like the step before, you know, we have to educate on the health condition.
And you'll do it like on behalf of the site, or you'll maybe with the site.
With the site. So we don't want to do anything on behalf of the site, because we really feel like researchers need to come to the community, and the sites need to come to the community and be out in the community to really build that trust.
Yeah.
So when we have our events, we have the community, the sites there with us, or researchers there with us, or the sponsor, whatever sponsor it is.
I see.
Yeah.
That's a good business model, actually. Somebody who had a site in Anaheim, but it was on the border with Long Beach. We actually had, and we did a lot of psych studies. We had a lot of patients. Like, I think I told you this in our interview, right? We had a lot of African-American patients because we did a lot of psych studies. I went to LA, recruited all the time. I never knew that there was a diversity problem. I didn't know until I started talking to other sites and going to conferences. Like, what do you mean diversity problem? Like, we don't have this issue. Because we were actually doing what I imagine you're kind of helping sites do, or what they should be doing on their own, but maybe they don't know how. And I think what helped me out is early on I had a couple of business partners. One was African-American guy, and he knew all the spots to go. So I was like, hey, Don, you know, where do we go, man? We have this bipolar. He would show me. And so then I would go meet, like, the activity center directors, the food kitchen places. There was this lady in Inglewood that would make, like, well, she had, like, a shop. And it was just, like, getting to know these people in the community. Yeah,
Really, it is that simple.
Yeah.
Like, to really get to know people in the community and really to treat them like people.
And they would send you people. Like, if they see that you're serious.
Yeah, and you care.
Yeah.
They see that you actually care. Yes. Yeah.
Well, of course. Like, any just one patient from their, you know, network would go back and say, hey, this guy Dan over here in Anaheim, you know, he'll even drive to get you there. Like, so we had patients through the door for a while.
Yeah.
And it was what I imagine you do now to help sites.
Word of mouth.
Yep.
Like, that got around to the community, right?
Yep.
That you were giving, you were doing something for the community. Mm-hmm. And they appreciated that, and they sent their loved ones.
So why do sites don't do that? Because I think I got lucky, maybe, or I just didn't know what I was doing, so I relied on other people.
Yeah. I honestly think that we have to vet the people we hire a little bit better. Like, we really need passionate people. And I know everybody might not be passionate about this, but we really need to share with when we're interviewing and when we're, like, vetting people that are going to be out there in the community working. Like, hey, this is an important issue, and we really need you to show some, you know, concern and empathy, you know.
And an interest.
And don't look at it as just a job, or they're just a number, because they feel that.
Yeah.
Like, the people will feel that.
And yeah, when you go out there and you just are there for, I mean, they can tell when you're going, you know, just because you have a new study versus when you go just because they have an event and, you're going there to support.
Yep. And that's what I think, that's what's so important, is to show up when you're not recruiting.
Oh.
You can't just go in recruiting. You have to just be there just because you want to be in the community.
That's what works. Cheers to that. Cheers to that. That's true. And when you hire, you need to hire, like you said, people that are competent in the local community. Mm-hmm. We have a staff member. Her name is Lana. She's like the community outreach person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she pairs well with the other staff. So, like, what should other sites do? You were saying in the interview process, maybe try to hire people that are good at, like, community outreach.
I think, like, social work is a good, like, someone, social like, work. With that background, public health, people that, like, are, you know.
I think there's going to be a lot of those people available. Pretty soon.
Why do you say that?
With this administration.
Okay.
I mean, the kind of cuts they said they're going to make.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to keep it relevant with the times. Mm-hmm. Like, government workers, a lot of them are going to be, like, those budgets are getting scrutinized. So I think sites do have opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think private industry maybe has opportunity to take some of that market share back.
Uh-huh. So come on over to research.
Yep.
And then we just train them. So a robust training program is going to be important at the sites.
Yeah.
You know, because you can train people, research, teach people.
I feel like a site owner needs to know this, because if I were starting a site right now in, like, south side of Chicago, or actually know a good site there, shout out to Ada George, Eagle Clinical Research, or like South Central LA, right? Mm-hmm. First thing I would do is hire someone that's very competent and familiar with organizations around the area. But that person's not going to know what research is. That's me. And I have to tell them, hey, I think you'd do really good in this role. Would you be interested? Or I noticed you're out of a job, but guess what I'm doing, and I think you would be the right fit.
There's plenty training curriculums out there for research.
CRA Academy, so, CRC Academy.
Exactly. Put them in one of those. And now you got a pro.
So, but when you moved from Chicago to San Diego, when was this?
This was like 14 years ago.
14.
I've been in San Diego.
So for you were doing research out there.
Yep.
Assistant, then coordinator.
Yep.
And then you moved here.
So I was, I was a coordinator. I was in Alzheimer's research there. Then I moved into cancer research at the University of Chicago. Then I came out to San Diego to UCSD and worked in liver disease research.
Okay.
And then found myself back in Alzheimer's research. Kind of just stumbled
through
back
UCSD?
Into it. Through UCSD.
Okay.
And so I think I was just meant to be, and it's a passion.
As a coordinator, or what were you doing?
So I was a monitor.
Oh, you were a monitor.
I was a monitor once I moved out here and got back into Alzheimer's research, I became a monitor.
For UCSD? Mm-hmm. You never did with IQVIA or any of these guys, like the CROs?
So I worked for IQVIA as a clinical, what's one of the roles?
That's liaison? Site liaison?
In the office, the clinical research assistant?
Yeah.
Or specialist.
Clinical trial assistant. They call them all something else.
Yeah. CTA.
CTA. Yeah.
Clinical trial assistant. So I worked a little bit for IQVIA.
Okay.
Yep.
So monitor, CTA. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you throughout all these roles, you've seen the same issue that you saw in Chicago, basically, like a lack of opportunities for study participants and underserved communities.
Yeah. I mean, I was the one reviewing a lot of the data, you know, as a monitor. And so I would see, like, who was actually in the studies.
And you would actually pay attention to the demographics and say, hey, you know, we don't see enough, like, African-American representation here.
I would pay attention to it because that was, like, an interest of mine. Yeah. I don't think every monitor pays attention to that, but definitely, yeah.
But what did you notice? Like, we're underrepresented?
We're underrepresented, and it depends on where the site is, too. You know, of course, it depends on where the site is. So it's super important to have a site that's in, you know, diverse communities. To have more sites in diverse communities.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, you know, work on that problem more. So
diversity research now was just this idea that kind of came together over the years.
Yeah.
And you decided one day, you know what? Why don't you just do this? Like help sites do community outreach. It's actually a very simple business plan.
It's very simple. It's very simple. But the reason why I started it was because I wanted to educate my community. That's period, bottom line.
And then you did a nonprofit, right, which is not easy to do.
Right. So the purpose was I wanted to focus on participants, minority participants. So you don't see a lot of research organizations focusing in on a participant, which is funny because participants is who we need. That without participants, you can't.
Everyone's trying to do it a different way. Like let's go after the workers. Yeah. You know, there's other groups involved, but at the end of the day,
you have to have participants or it's not going to work.
And they don't want to do that because it's the hard work.
Oh, it's definitely the hard work.
It's an easy idea.
Yeah.
But the execution's not easy.
Well, it's because you're dealing with just regular community people. A lot of times I'm finding out that people don't want to deal with the community.
No.
I mean, it can get complicated. And you have to have hard conversations. So.
With who? Like.
In the community. Like all the injustices, the Tuskegee. Mm-hmm. All the things that have happened, the community wants to talk
about.
No,
they're going to end up asking you, like, hey.
They want to talk about it. And a lot of people don't want to talk about that. They want to shy away from that, which is something we definitely are not going to do. Like, Diverse Research Now, when we have our events and our discussions, we welcome those type of conversations. We need to have those to make it over.
Is there still a lot of mistrust in the communities?
I think what is most, the most number one issue now is not mistrust, it's awareness. It's bringing awareness to what studies are out there.
So once they're aware, they're like, once you know what?
No, not that once they're aware, but that they're interested, but they know that it's an option. So that's one of the biggest things that we try to get over in the community is like, hey, this study is out here. And if you need to look into it or if you have a family member that wants to look into it, this is an option for you. This is an option for your healthcare journey.
Mm-hmm.
Like people don't really think of clinical trials as an option in their healthcare journey. They just kind of listen to their doctors and
that's any community.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's any community. This is true.
Yeah, underserved, overserved, but it's no different.
This is true. This is true.
So the awareness is.
Uh-huh. I think that is the number one thing now.
And that's really the part. So the solution is really the sites, right? It's not, do you deal with sponsors as well? Or do the sponsors engage you to do it like on a national level maybe?
So this, yes. So the sponsors, you know, they work with the sites, right?
Right.
So,
well, the good ones do, like the ones here. Not all of them.
But some of them are trying to get out into the community themselves, you know, to highlight that they're doing certain research projects, you know, so which I think is good.
You think that's working?
I think it's going to be more effective to go through the sites.
Yes.
Like to work through the sites. And so like my organization, it will be good for us to like partner with sites.
Yeah.
And to kind of be an extension of the site. Because a lot of times the sites, you know, you only have limited time. Mm-hmm. You know, the PIs, the staff, they have limited time. But if you have a third party, like our organization, Diverse Research Now, comes in, we can help with the education. We can help with, we have a program called the Study Buddy Program where we can have advocates to actually come in and go to visits with participants. And this is
going to... Oh, you have that.
Yes. And we're going to... That program is going to help with retention.
Because that's the first I've ever heard of that.
Yes. So sometimes people just want someone to go through something with them.
Of course.
Yeah.
So if you come with me to the study, you know, it's a screening. They're going to have me sign all these forms. I'm kind of afraid.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have a buddy there next to you to help you understand, to make you feel comfortable.
And the buddy says, this is not a contract. You know, this is for your benefit.
Exactly. Well, the thing, too, is that a lot of times, even though the participant is there to participate, sometimes they are still hesitant and they don't really trust who they're, you know, working with. But if you bring a third party in that doesn't have any connection to the site, you know, we're there on the behalf of the participant to empower them.
Right. And give this is an interesting model. Yes. The study buddy thing is... Mm-hmm. Something I haven't heard of. Mm-hmm. I heard you mention it before, but I wasn't sure what it was.
Yeah. It's about like having an advocate. You know, I feel like at some point in our lives, we all need advocates.
And the study buddy comes through you guys.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And how do you find these people? Are they part of like volunteers or?
So we hire them. Okay. It's a hired position.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that would be a good role for like a former patient that have a good experience.
Sure. Possibly.
I mean, I guess study buddy.
Yeah.
You know, we had that informally in LA. Like, our best patients would become recruiters.
Uh-huh.
And now that you tell me, I'm thinking about it. The guy's name was Morgan. Like, this was like 20 years ago, but he was like, don't worry, I'm going to come with them on their first visit because they're afraid.
I think you told me about Morgan.
Morgan is a legend. If I can still have his number, I'm going to put him in touch with you because he'd be perfect for your organization. Yeah. I wish I knew you back then.
Yeah.
But he would do that.
Yeah. And how many people would you get in the door with
like,
him doing that?
He brought like 100 at least over the years. At least. And there was other Morgans. Once I learned that model, I was like, okay, Morgan's only one man, but who else is similar to Morgan? Mm-hmm. Okay, this guy, David. And then he brought like 50.
Yeah.
So people, it just worked that way.
People want support.
So they were study buddies in a way too.
Yeah. But they probably wasn't getting paid. We got to pay people today.
No, they got paid.
they got paid.
Yeah, for a randomized visit.
Morgan did?
Yeah, Morgan would get paid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, we paid him. No, we took care of him. Yeah. I mean, it made no sense not to. Like,
yeah. He's working.
He's out there working.
He's working.
I remember a few times I paid like his phone bills too. He's like, hey, man, my phone bill's like $400. I was like, don't worry. I got it. Just keep bringing them.
This is the message, like, to take care of the community.
But if you told an IRB that, they would be like, oh, well, what are you, you know, you can't do that. But it's for community outreach. It's not for any particular study.
Right.
So there's no IRB in charge of that.
Right.
This is where the industry gets ugly because
they try to do
counterproductive things and, you know.
So much red tape. And it really hinders organizations like mine, honestly. Like,
yeah, it's
hard
not worth
for us to do the work we really want to do.
Yeah, all that red tape and things like Tuskegee and Henrietta Lacks still happen. Like, it's not doing anything.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Wren, we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Everybody's got to go connect right now. LinkedIn, a link to our LinkedIn is underneath the video and in the show notes. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
You.
A very interesting business model too.
Thank you. We'll be hearing more from you.
And go follow your podcast.
Yes, Voices of Inclusive Research. You can find us on Spotify, Apple,
iTunes,
and YouTube. Honestly, we have
okay.
Yep. You can find us on YouTube.
I gotta go subscribe on there.
Our IG page is diverse_research_now. You can follow us there. And we also have a Facebook page.
I'm on that one too. Yeah. Thank you very much, Dr. Rem.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Hey, if you guys like that kind of content, make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share. Stay tuned for more videos.